This is Talk To Me. Your host, Joshua Toomey, bring you epic rants, anecdotes, and interviews with heavy hitters from hardcore
our new life begins!
To hair metal. This is Talk To Me.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into Talk To Me. This is episode 253. The guest this week is Bobby Blitz and Mark Mangy of BPMD. They are on to talk about their latest album, American Made, that will be out June 12th. But first, we have a special co-host on this episode, the singer and guitarist of Jesus Chrysler, the co-host of the Cobras and Fire podcast, the host of the sidecast, whatever, never mind, and the most handsome man in Minnesota. How you doing, Baco?
I'm well. Always be good to talk to you, Toomey. But so I got downgraded to Talk To Me. I thought I was going to finally be a guest on the fabulous new podcast that's taken pretty much the world by storm, Diabolus in Podcastica. And I challenge anybody to say that name right when they are on your show.
You have to say it like with a like Diablos in Podcastica. He can't even say it like just straight. You just have to throw an accent on it.
Like a Mexican drug dealer, Diablos in Podcastica. Right.
Yeah. It's good times. Well, let's talk about your sidecast since we're talking about my sidecast and the Whatever nice. Never Mind show program, as you would say.
Yeah. It's called Whatever Never Mind. Thanks for spoiling that for me. No, Whatever Never Mind is it's a grunge podcast. There's another show that's counting down Rolling Stone's 500 greatest albums, and I thought it would be fun to kind of do something like that, but you know, make it a little more niche. You know, in the sense of not like just anything out there, because the Rolling Stone top 500 pretty much will hit damn near everything: jazz, blues, rock, metal. Even Kiss is on the list. Kiss on the list.
Your kiss sounds like a song.
Hold on,
lips.
I'm going to write that down. I'm going to be writing a song when we're done here. I think it was 2018 or 2018 or 19. I know it came up in my memories recently on Facebook, but on Cobras and Fire, Luce and I did an episode dedicated to the Alice in Chains record Dirt. And the reaction made one thing pretty clear, that there really isn't a lot of podcasts talking about grunge, yet there's still a lot of people, you know, that remember it and really want to go back and kind of relive it, much like all the, you know, Kiss podcasts out there. You know what I mean? There is room for something other than Kiss, as Wiley would say. There's more than Kiss, right? When Luce decided to take a step back and kind of slow down his involvement as far as commitment to a monthly or a weekly show, I should say, I thought it would be kind of fun to do something different. And so I am counting down the 25 greatest grunge albums according to Rolling Stone. We are adhering strictly to their list. And it's actually a list of 50, but much like Luce won't commit to more than two episodes a month, I'm not going to commit to 50 episodes of this shit. But I can do 25. And so the point is that like every week I'm going to have a different guest host, and we're going to talk about whatever record is next on the list. And so far we opened up with the Melvins' Bullhead, in which a local guy, more of a podcaster in waiting, Andy Shaw, but he's definitely been a rockin' potter and that kind of stuff. He's kind of made his name through Pods and Sods. And one of your favorites, John Lamoureux. He's a big fan of the Hustle podcast. Then I also had, I'm already forgetting how I counted out. We're up to four or five episodes here. Oh, I had Zeus from the Shout Out Loudcast was on the Stone Temple Pilots episode. Then I had your current co-host on Dip, his former buddy, co-host, I should say, on don't make me sit the Rock and Metal Combat podcast. Oh, my God, I pulled that off. Ralph Vieira, Jesus Christ, Dr. Fuck would be a lot easier to say. So he came in for Soundgarden, Ultra Mega OK. And then just most recently, we had the Deep Six compilation with, of course, John Lamoureux from The Hustle. And I've been doing some side interviews and stuff like that with producer Jack Endino, who basically has his hands all throughout this list of 25, as well as there's an interview dropping by the time this is out. It'll be out because it comes out tomorrow with Bruce Pavitt, the founder of Sub Pop Records. And we get into basically not just the records and the bands, but we get into like grunge as a movement and how it like took over like the Penny's catalog and things of that nature. So I think people are going to enjoy that. That's kind of like side stuff for that. But yeah, it's all counting down to number one. The list is out there if you want to spoil it for yourself. But yeah, it's basically just giving grunge some due because, believe it or not, as much as that kind of took over and kind of took a big dump on hair metal, grunge kind of had a short-lived movement, and it's sort of been forgotten other than the handful of top hits.
Yeah, you know, it's funny kind of listening to the countdown so far and you know, even you know, Ralph's episode and the Zeus's episode and just hearing like staunch thrash guys and hardcore, you know, rock guys and Kiss guys like just gush over grunge. You know, you almost associate grunge kind of killing the music that you know, those guys love. But yet they were like all about Stone Temple Pilots, which blew my mind, and Soundgarden.
Oh, I agree. It's nice to know that it isn't just this all kinds of a hatred, because one thing that kind of comes up in every episode that, at least from my view, that I hearken on, I do think it really just, you know, it was very quick how it changed the scene, and the biggest I don't know what was the what's the word for it? Basically, the people who got hurt the most by this, almost like hair metal was lamp oil and grunge was electricity, if that makes sense. Electricity didn't really put lamp oil out of business. The fact that it was better did, and because you know the really lamp oil just kind of ran its course is really the better way to put it. And to hear some of these guys who are big Kiss fans or metal, although I kind of tie grunge and thrash metal together as far as a movement, not that they were the same movement, but they were kind of both arcing up similar times, and both kind of taking a dump on hair metal. But yeah, I get where you're going. Is kind of what I'm getting at. That was a really long way to get there.
You could have just said yes.
Go Titans!
There we go. Week four.
I'll see you in Minneapolis, bitch.
I don't know if I want to get too much into my thoughts on everything, because obviously I'll be doing an episode of whatever, never mind, at some point.
Spoiler alert.
But you know, it is funny, you know, we talk about, you know, my age, a little bit younger than some of the dudes that have been on the show so far, and so my vantage point of grunge was kind of the same thing with grunge, and maybe like Metallica was as a 7, 8, 9 year old, I wanted a guitar, but I assumed that you had to look like Poison to be in a band. So like my, you know, growing up in the country did not, that was not going to be okay. And then all of a sudden, you know, grunge and Metallica and thrash kind of, I start seeing that in the early 90s, and I'm like, oh, well, you can look like that and be in a band. I'll be in, you know, I'm getting a bass tomorrow kind of thing.
Right on. That's one of the things that I'm really looking forward to and actually intentionally trying to do, is to get a lot of different type of input. Like, I want old white guys. I want young white guys. I want white guys who like Kiss. No, I'm just kidding.
It's a very diverse crowd.
I'm making a divide. Look, you know, podcasters are all old white nerds, is the joke there. I'm not actually trying to limit that. No, I really do want kind of different, I don't know, ideological backgrounds and in different ages and stuff like that. You're going to kind of come in as a guy who really was probably too young to understand what was happening movement-wise, but still knew enough about music and pay attention to it. Like you said, you know, you knew what Metallica was different than, you know, Poison and that kind of stuff. So I like that. You know, and having a guy like John Lamoureux, who doesn't really get into a lot of hard rock, or even Dr. Fuck, who is like 900 years old. I mean, he's a vampire. Not a lot of shows have vampires come on and tell their thoughts on things, you know. So, you know, even like Andy Shaw locally, he's just kind of a Minnesota don't you know kind of guy. He kind of comes in with almost a milk toast approach to it that I really think, you know, kind of challenges, you know, me a little bit. And even that was the point with the list, is that like I could make my own top 25, which is why I'm allowing myself and everybody who comes on the show to re-rank it, so we can at the end have an aggregated re-ranking of the top 25. But to me, this is almost better that it forces your hand to listen to music that maybe you wouldn't otherwise. And that's kind of where I'm going with this. And also, I really do just want to give grunge a little bit of love. It wasn't the most important music of my life, but it definitely mattered. And I have some passion for it. And I was always a big fan of the big three of the big four and a bunch of the side offs. So,
well, one last thing on the new podcast that I really, really enjoyed was your Jack and Dino interview. And, you know, for someone's name that I've, you know, seen on the back of records and but don't know a whole lot about, and for that to kind of pop up, and it even took me a minute to realize who the guest was, and I was like, oh shit, that's who that is. But man, you got some great stuff out of him. He was a great guest. And just how did that come about, and all that good stuff?
Well, as I started getting into this, I had about three episodes recorded I was quarantined for about 2 weeks before work called me back. And during that 2 weeks, I recorded as much as I could. And while I was doing that, I was starting to think of kind of a, I don't know, what kind of ancillary stuff could I pull in as far as interviews, guys like Jack and Dino, people that were involved. And his name just showed up a ton as far as, like, as I'm going through this list, producer, producer, producer. And then it was really when I started listening to the Deep Six record, and I'm like, holy crap, this guy is actually in one of these bands. And I'm like, I got to get this guy. So I basically just looked him up. And you go to his website, jackanddino.com, and he's got some pretty clear instructions for if you actually want to get a hold of him. And I did it. Within 10 minutes, he got back to me. And within about an hour, we had everything sorted out and the interview scheduled. And, yeah, he couldn't have been cooler. He said, yeah, I got about 10 minutes for you. And I think the interview was about 45 minutes.
Stuff.
So he was a great guy, really opened up. And, you know, I'm not asking him for dirt on stuff, but he had a lot of fun stories and some candid, you know, memories of that time. Some really good anecdotes.
Yeah, and I think he enjoyed that you knew what you were talking about. And that's a lot of the guests you get. You know, you do that really well, and I hope that I do that well when I talk to people. But, you know, I know what I'm talking about, so it opens people up a little bit more. And you get that, like, yeah, I can give you 20 minutes. And then at the 20-minute mark, you're, like, starting to wrap it up. And they're like, oh, no, we can keep going. And that's always, like, the best compliment.
You're going to love the Bruce Pavin interview then, because I think that one, he gets real laid back pretty
nice.
Quick. He gets the sensibilities and everything. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it seems like those guys would get just barraged with, like, you know, what was Kurt Cobain like, you know? And I feel like you kind of hit him with deep questions that he might not have even been asked, you know, for years about, you know, just recording Soundgarden EPs and even that Deep Six compilation. You know, I don't know how many people bring that up to him, so I'm sure that it's much better to talk about that than, you know, Bleach for the millionth time.
I agree, and as a listener, I think especially to shows like ours, what I gotta believe most of our audience is pretty well versed in the obvious shit, you know what I mean? I mentioned the Bruce Pavin interview. The one question that I kind of, like, I knew I had to put in there in case anybody hadn't heard it, but was the story about coming up with $600 to pay for Bleach. They didn't have it.
Wow.
You know what I mean? The first Nirvana record. And think how things would have been different if they never really came through with that. They had because there's another story that he tells that they had a huge payday that, you know, once Nirvana broke, that they would have never gotten had those two things not happened. But yeah, the idea that, like, man, we almost didn't have $606.91 to record, you know, Nirvana's debut record. And I do think a lot of people have heard it, but I just figured I got to throw that one in there. But other than that, I think we stayed away from the big stuff.
I wish I would have had a recording studio anywhere near me that sounded decent. That was like $10 an hour. You know, I was like, where was that place when I was growing up?
I'm with you. There's a little bit of luck involved in the fact that they were able to actually capture really good tracks. But the great thing about grunge, especially the early stuff, is that it really didn't take a lot of production to make it sound the way it should. Like, I didn't joke when I said on that Deep Six record, I think those Melvins, like, damn near demos, sound almost as up to par with their, like, Atlantic Records debut, sound-wise, sonically.
Yeah, Buzz was doing some different stuff with his vocals on that, too, I thought. I was like, wow, that's like a range.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and it almost seemed like he understood song structure, too. You know, I just, like, verse, chorus, solo, you know.
But, well, you know, I guess we could, you know, if people want to, they can go and check out the list. But of the 25 albums, you know, what's not on there that you wish was on there that you could have covered in this podcast?
You know, that comes to mind quite a bit. Obviously, Alice in Chains' Jar of Flies is one that it is in the top 50, but it didn't crack the top 25, and for me, it definitely would. But Mother Love Bone, I mean, I have they basically released an EP and a full-length record called, oh, shoot, I can't remember which one is which, but basically the full-length album I think should be in the top 25. I absolutely love that record. And another one that sticks out would be Soundgarden's Loud Love, still in the top 50 but didn't quite crack the top 25. I believe it's just inside 30, but for me, those would be three that would be a lot. And then, you know, people get a little bit outside of that stuff, what you want to call grunge or not. That first Veruca Salt record with Seether on it, I think it's called American Thighs. I like that record, but I'm not sure a lot of people would consider that grunge. But those would be some off the top of my head. I mean, have you looked at the list? Is there any that you think are missing?
You know, I haven't looked at the list since you first sent it out to find people to check stuff out, but I can't think of anything that wasn't on there. You know, I didn't go deep into the grunge catalog, you know, so I don't know if there's some hidden gems in there. I mean, you know, the fact that I think that, you know, like Mudhoney's on the list, I think that's good and things like that.
Yeah. I will say this. I think it's a fair list. I don't think it's one of those lists that just, like, has these arbitrarily argumentative, you know, ones slapped in there. I think as much as I feel those way about those records, they are still kind of in there somewhere. And I really have a hard time, even though, like, I look, people probably without, you know, thinking too hard can realize that Nirvana Nevermind is number one. In my personal ranking, it is nowhere near number one. But I can still understand why it is what I'm getting at. I think it's a fairly fair list compared to a lot of lists that I've seen. Let's put it that way.
I think of this list, I think that the my favorite album from 25 to 50 would be the Toadies' Rubberneck. I think that's like the only album I would jump in and bring it up.
Jay Zablewski. Jay Zablewski is a big fan of that, and he, when he heard I was doing this, he's like, "Yeah, if you need me to come on for that one."
But I would have never thought that was a 50 greatest grunge album.
I would never put it there either, but especially since I can only name one song off. Yeah, but I'll say that. How about that? From 25 to 50, there are more gaps, and like, I don't even know why this is here.
Right.
I mean, and Neil Young and Crazy Horse seems to be kind of a where they jumped in and tried to be grunge. And there's arguments that Neil Young invented the sound that the Seattle bands, you know, embraced.
And from what I heard with the U-Men, I don't know how they're grunge at all. So.
Yeah, I'm with you. And actually, you know what? Gish coming in at 32. That's a record that I like by the Pumpkins. I guess I would put in the top 25.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and you want to get the Whatever Nevermind podcast? You just subscribe to Cobras and Fire, and it's on the same feed.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I've actually had to straighten that up for. It's been confusing for a few people is a better way to put that. So apparently, you know, like when you're on this end of it, you're like, this is when I'm doing it. It all makes sense. It's a Cobras and Fire podcast, but it's without loose cannon, basically, you know. And we're putting it where, you know, because these things, they're not really time sensitive, that kind of thing. We're making it a lower priority than our own show. Like, for instance, we had the Ron Keel interview followed by part one of Hot in the Shade, the Kiss record review. Well, we're not going to, you know, wait another week to put part two. So there was a 3-week gap without any of this stuff. So, but the short answer is basically every other week there should be a whatever, never mind. I'll throw the bonus stuff out there probably on the Thursdays of those weeks. But yeah, it's also going to time around kind of like how Lucy and I can kind of form our own show. That's going to always take a priority. And eventually we'll get down from 25 to 1. And then, you know, yeah, maybe you just want to wait it out. And then just go to our website, cobrasonfire.com, and download all 25 and sit around for 30, 35 hours and just hammer through them all in a row and enjoy it. But I encourage people, and for the most part, it's been accepted. The response has been great, by the way. But just trying to get the word out there that, there is this kind of grunge thing going on here. It's a show called Whatever Never Mind, hosted by Baco from Cobras on Fire, with a special guest host every week where we break down the 25 greatest grunge albums according to Rolling Stone.
I think the full title of the show should be Cobras on Fire presents Whatever Never Mind, a part of the Decibel Geek Podcast Network.
Oh, you're a fucking dick. You're jealous and envy. It's the killer of all, man.
Oh my god. Well, I know how much you love covers, and Bobby Blitz and Mark Mangi are on to talk about their all covers album, American Made. Have you heard anything off of American Made?
I have not. Actually, I didn't know what was going on until you just introduced me on the show. So is this something I should look forward to? I mean, Ron Keel just in his band just dropped their covers record. I could really use two in my life right now.
Well, I mean, they do some classic 70s covers on this one. They do the singles that are out are Toys in the Attic by Aerosmith and a Cactus Song, I believe. And then on the album is some Skynyrd covers. And we're an American Band and all kinds of just great stuff. And it's Phil Demmel, formerly of Machine Head, currently of Violence, and drummer for every band out there, Mike Portnoy, obviously Bobby Blitz and Mark Mangi. So it's good times.
And Bobby's playing bass, right?
Yeah, Bobby's just, it's Portnoy's singing.
No, I should maybe track one of these guys down for an interview. I'm actually the opening act for Bobby Blitz right
now,
huh?
Yeah, the Jesus Chrysler Overkill show is basically happening on my podcast right now.
Ooh, nice. Yeah, I like that.
Well, Baco, man, it's always a pleasure to get you on the show, and have a good rest of your evening, sir.
Yeah, I love you, Timmy. Thanks a lot.
We just did an interview in the UK, and I was making sandwiches and taking stuff out of a bag, and the guy goes, "I'm sorry, we can't hear anything because there's a crackling noise in the background."
Nice.
I'm like, oh shit, that's me.
Yeah, are you good on your food? Have you eaten everything? And you know, you full and ready to go?
All said, I've moved to the banana and the orange juice. We're good.
Well, all right, guys, we are here to talk today about BPMD, the new album American Made, out June 12th. And to talk about that with us today, we've got Bobby Blitz and Mark Mangi. How are you guys doing today?
Hey, Josh. Good to hear you, man.
Hey. What's going on?
Doing well. Actually, I ended up, I talked to Phil Demmel about this album a few months ago when I was in San Francisco, one of the last trips anyone was ever allowed to make. But man, I finally got the full download of it, the full stream of it, and it's a great great covers album, man. Good job, guys.
Thank you. Really well appreciated.
The I know the backstory of this a little bit is everyone came to the album with two songs, and then you guys collectively did two other songs for a total of 10 songs. So we'll start with Bobby. What two songs did you pick out, and you know, what was kind of your reasoning behind it?
You know, when Mark got to me about 10 minutes after his son suggested this to him, I didn't even let him finish his sentence and jumped in with two songs because I picked a Cactus song called Evil, which is actually reimagined by Cactus. It was originally a Willie Dixon tune.
Okay.
And I jumped all over a song called Never in My Life by Mountain, which is a little bit of a deeper cut from their record Climbing. Which also contained Mississippi Queen, which was the, you know, the first foot forward for them as far as big time radio play. But I was a kid during this era, so this was really easy for me to transport myself from 2019 back to the mid 70s when I was looking for something in my life, and Never in My Life was one of those tunes.
Nice.
Old bastard.
Wise bastard. Wise bastard.
And Mark, same thing for you, man.
Considering I'm probably, I would say, 40, 45 years younger. I'm sorry. No, I picked Saturday Night Special by Skinner.
That
was
nice.
The catalyst that started this thing. That was the song my family and I were listening to. You know, in my back, I have like a little neat backyard set up, fire pit and whatnot. I was just drinking a beer, and Saturday Night Special was on, and my son goes, "Dad, you guys should do this." And I guess he thought this and I thought this, you know, well, this wouldn't work for Metal Allegiance, you know, that's for sure. And then all of a sudden, the light bulb went off and I started hearing guitar parts, drum parts, you know, guitar riffs, and all this shit started going off in my brain. And coincidentally, at the same time, I was texting with Blitz, busting his chops or dissing him on something, and I texted him. I was like, "Hey man, I gotta call you." And I called him. I was like, "Hey, what do you think about doing something like this?" And then that's when he rifled off those songs, and that's kind of how this was born, just from that 5-minute span right there. And then on the flip side of things, I knew I wanted to do a ZZ Top song, and Tres Hombres is one of my favorite records of all time, and I could have easily picked LaGrange. I could have easily picked any song off that. But I picked Beer Drinkers and Hellraisers just because I wanted to see if we could turn into a thrash jam band. And I wanted to see what we could do with something like that. That's so open for interpretation. And hence the two songs I picked.
Yeah, the Saturday Night Special is the one that I've gone back to the most on all of this. And it's funny you're talking about being outside, grilling out around the fire pit or whatnot. I mean, The 70s classic rock, there's something about just putting that on in the backyard with a couple of beers and grilling some dogs or something that's just essential for that type of music.
And I think, yeah, it agreed. You know, Phil Demmel said it best, one of the interviews him and I did together. When I think of this, I want to be in the backyard mowing a lawn, drinking a beer, then grilling up some burgers. That's what this is. And fortunately or unfortunately, it depends on how one looks at this. We're in a pretty shitty state of the world right now, and I think these tunes will probably resonate even more so as you know we carry on with this corona crap, and you know it's getting nicer out. People are outside and can't leave their house. You know, you're going to crank tunes and grill and mow the lawn or do whatever it is that you do, and you know, and Saturday Night Special is, you know, and Aerosmith and ZZ Top, Van Halen especially, those are tunes you're listening to outside, man, having fun and just relaxing.
Now, Bobby, when this album kicks off, you know, Wang Dang Sweet Poon Tang comes out and you're just going for it, you know, kind of walk me through recording that, and was that a fun time kind of recording that intro to that song?
You know, I paid attention, obviously, to Double Live Gonzo, recorded in Nashville, Tennessee, that night back in the 70s, and that introduction by Ted to the song is just classic. And somewhere in the back of my head, I was thinking, and I mentioned it to Mark and the other guys, I said, "I'm doing this. I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to tailor make it to us." And it came into my head, and I recorded with this guy, Johnny Rod, And I was telling him, I said, you name yourself Johnny Rod. It sounds like a porn production place you got.
But, yeah, I said, I love his movies.
I said, not a lot of wardrobe in those movies. But I was in the vocal booth, and he goes, you ready? I said, put me in input and just leave it. And I got it one take.
Oh,
you know,
nice.
And all I did was tailor it to, you know, to our release. And I think that we all just simultaneously agreed when I sent them that cut with this spliced into the front end that this is how we're going to have to kick the record off, because, you know, it kind of kicks the door in. It's that kind of wild man 1970s rock and roll is fucking dangerous kind of a vibe to it. So it just, I mean, it was perfect for the record. So everybody simultaneously agreed, let's do this. Let's leave it the cut. And I think it really sets the tone.
And, you know, just to add to what Bobby said, he said he did that in one take. You know, that's really the foundation for this record. You know, all of us, we all, you know, we're in that 70s mindset. And, you know, anyone who knows anything about recording, if you were a recording musician in the 70s and you were on a label, you had to have your shit together as a musician. And there was no undo, copy and paste, you know, delete, start. That didn't happen.
Right.
So all, you know, Portnoy, he tracked all his drums live to Phil and I in one day. So it captures that energy. And that was one take, maybe two takes, if, you know, he wasn't happy with something. And same thing with myself. I went into the mindset with recording bass going, I need to do this in one take. And if I don't do this in one full take and I screw it up, I'm throwing everything away and starting over. It's just, that was the mindset all of us shared with this, you know, to keep that live energy, to challenge ourselves as musicians. And like Bobby said, that intro really, you know, sets this record off. And not a lot of people, probably the newer generation, is probably not so familiar with Double Wide Gonzo in that intro. And I think it captures the spirit of this record and our mindset with this record.
Now, I know, Mark, you've done the Metal Allegiance thing for a long time, so you've got a relationship with a lot of people out there, with Ellefson, with Portnoy, and things like that. But getting this album together, you know, just getting it together, kind of talk me through, you know, like putting the four people together.
Well, MA is definitely the spark plug here. You know, Bobby and I had a great chemistry. We co-wrote a song together for the last MA record. And when I delivered him the music and the lyrics, I said, hey, man, this is the music. These are the lyrics. Let me know what you think. He came back to me and he asked, can I, you know, alter things to fix my vocal style? And says, I'm absolutely. So we started So we took the concept of the song I written, and we changed it, and we co-wrote it together, the lyrics, which was awesome. And I had a blast doing it with him. We developed a really good chemistry in writing that tune, which is Mother of Sin on the last record. Moving forward from there, you know, Portnoy, this is our fourth record together. We have a good in-studio chemistry. He knows how I work. I know how he works. And I warned Blitz and Demel, good luck. but I know how Mike works. And so we have that chemistry from countless shows to, you know, three records previously. And with Phil, he's always been my stage right buddy in all the gigs we've done. You know, it's either him or Andreas over there with me. And Phil and I have always had this good live chemistry. So at least my thought process, and again, it was at a 5-minute span, called Bobby. You know, Bobby and I were toying around about doing something together. We didn't know what it was going to be. I guess this is it. But we wanted to do something together outside of MA. And then Portnoy and Demel, it just came up literally within a 5-minute span. It wasn't, you know, a thought out plan. It wasn't a grand scheme. I want to get this guy and this guy. It was not that at all. It was very spontaneous, very fast moving project.
Now, I do want to go back to Metal Allegiance for one second with you, with Metal Allegiance. You know, what were you doing prior to Metal Allegiance that got you in a position to kind of bring so many just metal powerhouses together?
I don't know. You know, it was, I worked in the business for a long time and I knew a lot of these guys. And then when MA started, we started again, I guess, much like BPMD, we're a glorified cover band. It was dudes having fun, and it was on the Motorhead Motorboat Cruise, the first one, that we kind of said, you know, we should write a record as MA. And Portnoy, I think it was Portnoy. It was either Portnoy or Dave, and they knew I played, and they knew what I could do, writing, playing bass, lyrically. Portnoy actually saw one of my lyric books and goes, dude, why aren't you getting any of this out there? And that's kind of how I got roped into it. And, yeah, it was just, again, same thing. It was very, wasn't planned, man. If you would have asked me 10, even 6 years ago, if that was going to happen, I probably would have laughed. So it was definitely spontaneous, same thing. But again, I worked in the business. I knew these dudes, we were all friends. And it was just a hurricane in the Atlantic Ocean circling Cuba, where all this kind of came into fruition.
Nice.
You know, it was boredom. It was boredom and me having a few tropical drinks roaming around. So, I mean, really, that was kind of how that was put together. And it just spawned from there.
I think that's how every great thing is put together, over some tropical drinks. One too many drinks and you'll put together a super group.
Well, that's how Alex got into MA. You know, it's funny. Testament was playing at Cruise, but he was not a part of MA. And he was sitting there eating dinner with the Anthrax guys, and we were docked at Cozumel, Mexico. And I was out with Darren, who is my tech. He's actually Troy Sanders from Mastodon's brother. Him and I were roaming around to find taco joints of Cozumel, and we kind of got into some light mischief fun. And I strolled back onto that boat. I had board shorts on, sandals, and a freaking straw hat, and a glass that was about 4 feet long. Seriously, nice. With a giant straw. And I just pointed to Alex, and I go, "You're joining MA." And I just went to bed. Literally, I had to put myself to bed. And the next day, he joined MA. And that's how Alex got in on MA. And we've developed an amazing relationship. You know, he's basically the Lars to my Hetfield, or I'm the Lars to his Hetfield,
nice.
If you will. And we have a great chemistry writing together.
So you're going to tell me there's a Sanders brother that's not a bass player, but he's a bass tech?
Yeah, Darren is an amazing human being.
Yeah.
He's been working with MA since day one, show one. And he's great. He runs the show in Mastodon World as well, Darren. And he's been with Mastodon from day one, and he's an awesome person. And he has a Bill Cosby tattoo on his back, so I just like to make fun of him for that.
Now, Bobby, back to you on this album. You know, when I heard you were singing some of these songs, I was like, I'm really interested to hear your voice over kind of some of this classic rock. You know, lending your voice to classic rock like this, you know, were you nervous going into it? You know, any trepidation to kind of sing like this? Or were you just, you know, this is the stuff you grew up on and you wanted to do?
Oh, sorry. Sorry, I fell asleep.
Hey.
We'll make you a sandwich.
Yeah, all those sandwiches put you to sleep.
Mark has a 4-foot drink. He turns into an alpha male. But listen, Josh, I came from this era, you know. I mean, I've said it in other interviews, I was going through puberty when all these fucking songs were released. So, I mean, these were, in many cases, or at least these bands, were my introduction into wanting something. They showed, I didn't know what I wanted, but I wanted something. And for some reason, when I listened to the hard rock of that era, which really was the bridge to heavy metal for me, that it excited me. I mean, it got my blood going. It did all the right things for a young man who was absolutely confused about what he wanted to do, but somewhere it straightened it out for me. I just mentioned to somebody, my first concert was Queen in 1975. So, I mean, if you see Freddie Mercury on Sheer Heart Attack, somewhere inside you want more of that drug. I want more of this.
Where was that show, man?
Capitol Theater in Passaic, New Jersey. Actually with Kansas as one of the openers. So, I mean, what a great introduction to music, to hard rock, to what would eventually become heavy metal in my life. So I knew a lot of this stuff back then. I mean, this was, I had the I picked, for instance, Never in My Life by Mountain and Evil from Cactus for my two cuts on this record. And I was familiar with those on their release dates or very soon thereafter. So for me, this was taking me from 2019 and transporting myself back to my youth. And what a welcome journey that is to go back to where it kind of all started. So I never really thought to myself I couldn't do this or I would have to tailor myself to it. Now, obviously, there was challenges. I'm cut like a motherfucker for the Mountain tune, but I have to learn a David Lee Roth presentation on DOA. But for me, it was never anything but excitement and fun. So I think that if a criticism comes up about it being a cover record, then I think that a person forgets why they started doing this, because there's very few of us who are the virtuosos who pick up a guitar or a microphone and write something that is timeless the first time they do it. So I'm back to where I started, and it was a welcome departure.
Well, if you want to feel good, I think my fourth or fifth concert was an Overkill concert in 94, so.
I feel very good right now.
I have
I forgot what year it was. It was, Bobby, I don't know if you remember this venue. It was called the Vanderbilt here on Long Island. Overkill played there. Again, I forgot what year it was, what cycle that was. But I remember being in that crowd going, wow, this band just doesn't give a shit about anything. And that had an impact on me, that show, as a musician. And I was actually there with our mutual friend, Mr. Dan Leo, at that gig. And that sticks out in my head as one of those, like, you know, holy shit shows.
Yeah, I've definitely got a photo of me and you, Bobby, from that show, and I've definitely got a nice coming in crustache and all that good stuff. So.
Awesome.
Yeah, I post it occasionally on Facebook, and everybody always gets a good laugh out of me, and you know they're like, "Man, Bobby's awesome." But yeah, it's a great picture of the two of us from 1994.
Oh, that's killer, man.
Yeah, it was very good. And there was, you know, that was talking about just seeing an early show of Overkill or just being one of my early shows being Overkill and seeing you guys play, you know, it was definitely one of those like, wow, these guys are fucking killing it too. So, Mark, I kind of had the same thought you did seeing them when I did. So,
yeah.
I'm gonna treat myself to a beer. I feel so good.
Mark and I have very long, big, fruity drinks right now, so we're just passing out the love.
Overkill, always, you know, and I said this on a few interviews. You know, to me, Bobby fills the shoes Lemmy left behind. The I don't give a shit, you know, attitude. Yeah, this is what we are. This is what it is. And I've always respected that about him and about Overkill. And, you know, granted, he's an asshole most of the time. But I love him for that.
That's a pretty big shoes to fill there. Let me tell you something. That's a nice compliment, though. Thank you.
You're not welcome.
I'm fucking blushing over here.
Hey, go make me a sandwich.
Yeah. Yeah. What kind of sandwich did you make, Bobby?
I tell you, I mean, this guy was saying, you know, I was crinkling up this paper bag, you know, rolling stuff back into it, and they stopped the recording, you know, because they didn't want to do any editing. And there's a really loud crinkling, and I copped to the sandwich, right? I said, it was me. I was making a sandwich, right? So he goes, oh, it's okay, Bobby. I said, listen, it's mayonnaise. I said, it's ham and Swiss. Is mayonnaise, tomatoes, and lettuce good for everybody?
Oh, man. You know, in talking to Phil about this album back a couple of months ago, talking about you guys getting together and doing it, he said you guys actually got together in a room and jammed these songs out. You know, that's kind of a lost art. And was that something you guys wanted to do to kind of, you know, recreate the classics of this time and not just send files to each other?
Oh, for sure, man. I mean, the idea of this was to have the mindset, you know, that was going to be the fun part about it. This is, as I spoke earlier about how many of the guys in our industry and industries that precede us and follow us or those time frames, they start by picking up you know, something off Kill 'Em All. They start by, you know, learning a Queen song or a Mountain song or a ZZ Top song or a Napalm Death song, whatever it may be. So this is their, you know, this is how they're introduced to this. So for us to do that, it reminded me of the first bands I was in. You know, when somebody would say, oh, I can't sing this song, I say, I'll give it a shot. You know, I mean, it's not, I'm not going to guarantee it's going to be good, but I'm not afraid to do it. So I think that when you had that as the mindset, that let's think the beginning, the results we got with the experience that we accumulated from that beginning to the present day of recording was all applied. And that's where what the X factor was. It wasn't just the first band you were in. It was thinking like the first band you were in, but applying the presentation and experience you had over decades. So there's where it worked, and that was the magical X factor.
You know, I was going to add to that, I was going to do this, Bobby.
Man, if I wasn't in a fucking pandemic, I'd come out there and punch you right the fucking nose.
6 feet away, Bobby, 6 feet away.
No, but I'm going to give you a socially distanced ass beating.
No, but to add to Bobby's point, if we didn't get into that room and do this the way we did it, I'm convinced the record wouldn't sound the way it sounds with that live feel to it.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely it's definitely good. Last couple of questions, Mark. I was looking at your bio here, and it says obviously a disciple of the late great Cliff Burton. Give me top Cliff Burton bass line.
Oh, Orion.
No, yeah, well,
that's the holy grail of bass lines or songs. If you know the composition alone.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Bobby, any Cliff Burton stories?
Oh, geez. I mean, in the early days, I remember, I mean, they were down hanging out with the Old Bridge guys. I met them down there early on. I think Dave was actually in the band at that particular time. He was one of the first ones here in New Jersey at the time. Then later on, we, you know, they had some gigs. They were, John Zazula was handling them. And the Old Bridge guys were putting them up, I think, in the basement and set up, you know, drum kits and rolled in a few Marshalls for them to play on. But after that, I saw them with Cliff at a place called L'Amour out in Brooklyn, which was, you know, the mecca of metal for on the East Coast, if not the entire United States. You know, if Los Angeles had more of the, you know, the hair glam kind of bands that were on the Sunset Strip, you know, L'Amour simultaneously on the East Coast was hardcore and what thrash was turning into at that particular time. So my memory of it is more a complete Metallica memory, and it felt like the start of something that was going to be monstrous. And to be part of that was, you know, even a small part of that was a really exciting time. It's a, you know, you want more of that drug. You want, you know, I want to get high again. I want to get high again. And I think it's one of the things that have motivated us from the early days of Metallica and Cliff Burton all the way up to the present day in 2020.
Did Overkill, did you guys do a lot of those shows, those early, you know, those Militia, the Jersey, the Staten Island, those Brooklyn?
We didn't do a lot of them. I they confronted me at a place because we got into a fight at one of our first gigs, and there was about eight of them waiting outside the club to hand me my head. And and I said, well, I got to face these guys or I'll never be able to walk around in Jersey again. So I did, and I apparently liked that. And that was mine and Overkill's introduction into it. But I also did shows with Metallica at a place called the State Theater, one show with them at the State Theater in Port Jervis, New York. Just a local promoter brought them in and jammed us in there as the opener. And that was actually my first experience with them playing.
You know, it's funny you said Dave Mustaine was one of the first people to get to New Jersey, and it's kind of funny he was one of the first people to leave, too.
I didn't say there wasn't irony in this story of ours.
Well, guys, it's been an absolute blast, and, you know, like we said earlier, the album will be called American Made, out June 12th, And we'll finish this off with Toys in the Attic. So just a quick, you know, reasoning why you guys did Toys in the Attic, and we'll get out of here.
That was a Portnoy pick. And again, it's not the Aerosmith song I would have picked. That's the beautiful part of it. And when once we put our spin on it and we recorded it, we all kind of felt like, wow, this might be the song to lead this campaign. And there's a little thrash in there. There's, you know, great demo down picking and just, you know, the energy of that song, I think, captures what this record is. And yeah, it's definitely a banger for sure.
Well, all right, guys.
I got something to say. I'd like to introduce a song. And
Yeah, do it.
I could do it a la Ted Nugent on the Wang Dang introduction.
All right, go
on the
for
front
it.
Of the record. Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. American, all ships at sea. That's right. You're on the Talk To Me podcast with your host, Josh Toomey. I am Bobby Blitz from Overkill, spinning all those heavy metal hits. Bite down hard, America. Toys in the Attic.
Thank you to Mark Mingy and Bobby Blitz of BPMD. Make sure you're checking out American Made out June 12th on Napalm Records. And also huge thank you up top to our good friend Baco from the Cobras and Fire podcast from Whatever Nevermind. Make sure you're checking out that show if you're into some grunge. And count down some records with us. I will be on... Since you're my listeners, I will let you know I will be on for Nirvana's In Utero. I think that's the eighth album on the list, so I'm a few episodes away, but that is going to be a lot of fun. So once again, huge thank you to Bobby Blitz, Mark Mayhew, Baco from Cobras and Fire. And if you've enjoyed this podcast so far, if you've made it this far, it sounds like you have enjoyed the show. Make sure you're heading over to Apple Podcasts, leave me a nice 5-star rating, nice 5-star review, hit that subscribe button. And the best way to support the show is to let your friends know that you are listening to the Talk To Me podcast. So for the Talk To Me podcast, I am Joshua Toomey, and I will talk to you next Thursday.